You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Public health experts worry that some people who are skeptical of a COVID vaccine may not take it once it's their turn. And it's especially worrisome for Latinos who are being hospitalized for COVID at a rate 4 times of white people. That's CDC data. We're looking at the effects of COVID on communities of color and the risks of vaccine hesitancy. Are you a frontline worker? Did you get the vaccine already, or do you plan to get it soon? Are you sharing information about the vaccine with your friends and family? What do they ask you? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Patricia Tallas-Heron is a family medicine physician and associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Tallas-Heron, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We also have Shiva Bidar Silaf, who is Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer at UW Health. Shiva, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes. Shiva, I'm going to start with you first. As we look at how disproportionate people of color are affected by COVID, how has UW Health considered these health disparities as you coordinate the rollout for the vaccine?
So, of course, we have seen throughout this pandemic that there has been an enormous disproportionate impact of COVID-19. So we have actually been doing work around education and engagement of our communities of color over the past 10 months, really, around COVID-19 and really how to do the interventions that are really around partnerships with our communities of color and organizations that are working on the ground to really get education out and answer questions. So we are using exactly what we have learned over the past 11 months as far as engaging in conversation to really talk about the vaccine. So it's really about having deep conversations, ongoing conversations through trusted sources in our communities of color. Really, I think the trusted sources and the partnerships are the key part of our work.
Yeah, those sources and the partnerships. Dr. Tallas-Heron, what are some of the most common concerns you've heard from your patients or community members about the vaccine?
Well, I just want to first mention that each community is different. So today we are talking about Latinx, but the concerns might be different in other populations because the historical experiences have been different. For our populations, there are still a segment, there is still a segment of our population that is undocumented. So a little bit of the immigration issues coming into the vaccine, particularly when we are seeing that in other parts of the country, that has been an issue, like California. But we want to reassure the people here in Wisconsin that that's not going to be something that is going to play into the vaccine, that they are safe once the vaccine is available, that they can come forward and get their vaccine. Another one of the concerns is that we have been historically in the shadows and the system has not seen us before. And that's a concern for people that actually really, really want to get the vaccine, but they feel that they are not going to be in line to get the vaccine because of these issues.
That's interesting. As you look at undocumented families or mixed status families, is there worry that if they give their information in order to get the vaccine, that that might compromise their status?
That is part of the things that we have been working with our community, at least here in Dane County, for many years. But it's definitely something that we are keeping in mind when we are now talking to our community about the vaccine.
We are looking at the vaccine rollout in the Latinx community with Dr. Patricia Tallas-Heron, who practices family medicine in Madison. She's been a leader in the Latino Health Council in Dane County for decades. Shiva Bidar Silaf is Chief Diversity Officer at UW Health. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Shiva, you participated in a clinical trial for the vaccine at UW. What has that experience been like?
Yes, indeed, I did participate. I am participating in the AstraZeneca clinical trial for the vaccine. And so I received actually a dose of what I don't know if it's the vaccine or the placebo, since it's a clinical trial and it's blinded, back in August. And then I received my second dose. And, you know, participating in the clinical trials was a really important decision for me, because one of the conversations for us often in communities of color is about the lack of representation in clinical trials. And so our communities end up not trusting a medication or a vaccine in this case, because we don't see ourselves represented in the people that participate in the clinical trial. So I felt that given the importance of COVID-19 vaccines, that participation in the clinical trial was really important, so that we have confidence in the results, right? We have confidence in the efficacy of the vaccine in our own communities. I received a lot of great information from the investigators that were leading this trial at UW Health. So I felt a great sense of confidence in participating. And it's been a really interesting experience to also see how much detail goes into a clinical trial. I had never participated in a clinical trial before. And so it's given me really also confidence now to see that there is so much that goes into a clinical trial. And so we should really have confidence in the results of a trial, because I'm being followed very closely. I'm being asked questions regularly. There is blood draws done regularly to kind of monitor how my body is reacting to either the placebo or the real vaccine. So it's been a very, very positive and great learning experience for myself.
Dr. Tyus Hidron, you recently were vaccinated for COVID. How did you feel about that experience?
Very happy.
I bet.
So I was so excited to be part of this and to be representing my community and taking the lead into showing them that the vaccine was safe.
Do you have any idea how you can help build confidence in your Latino community about these vaccines? Because there are questions about what is in the vaccine, what are the side effects, what will this vaccine do to me? What do you say when patients ask that?
Yes. So I think it really helps that we have built the trust and the confidence of our community over 20 years that we have been, Shiva and I, the co-chairs of the Latino Health Council. They have seen that we are part of them, that we represent them. So when they see me getting the vaccine, that sends a very good message that this vaccine is safe. But that is not enough. So we have a radio program in Spanish that we have done for 17 years. Again, building the trust. And we have been talking about COVID now for 9 months. And we have done now two programs where we took calls, where we brought Dr. Conway, who is one of our experts at the university. We are writing articles. We have a very structured education campaign that we're going to be doing moving forward. So we are hoping that with experience that we have from all these years of working with our community and the trust of our community, that we're going to be able to do this.
We are talking with family medicine physician Dr. Patricia Tyus Hidron and UW Health Chief Diversity Officer Shiva Bidar Seeloff about how the COVID vaccine will be accepted in communities of color, what barriers stand in the way, who do you turn to for reliable information, or how to stay safe in the pandemic? Are family members telling you conflicting reports about the COVID vaccine? Do you have access to COVID testing in your neighborhood? Have you put off being tested? Why? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the efforts to spread accurate and timely information about the COVID vaccine in communities of color. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. COVID has hit the Latino community disproportionately hard, and the vaccine is a critical piece in the pandemic fight. Public health information, especially in Spanish, is also key to counter vaccine disinformation from taking hold. Are you a public health worker? How do you build confidence and trust in the communities you work in? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. Dr. Patricia Tayas-Giron and UW Health Chief Diversity Officer Shiva Bidar-Siloff, they are leaders with the Latino Health Council of Dane County, and they stay with us. Shiva, there have been years, decades of mistrust in medical practices among Black Americans, among Indigenous, among immigrant communities. What are some of the long-term solutions for healthcare institutions like UW to build trust among these communities?
I think that the first step is to really start with acknowledgement that this mistrust is really based on actual facts. There has been a history of medical wrongs done to communities of color, right? So I think that we need to like really start with that place of saying that the mistrust is based on real experiences that have happened in our communities of color, and that it is difficult and sad to really think about how harmful that has been, but we need to acknowledge that it did happen. And it has happened not in the very far past, right? The history is actually pretty recent. As recently as last year, we heard about the hysterectomies that were happening without informed consent to immigrant women in detention centers down south. So I think it's important to first acknowledge that this has happened in the history of kind of medical research, and that it is still something that's very present in the minds of our communities of color. And after that acknowledgement, I think the next step is approaching our communities and our conversation with humility from a medical standpoint, not with the idea that, you know, we have all the answers and you should just do what we say, but to really say we're coming to you with acknowledgement and humility and understanding this mistrust and want to really build trust in a really authentic way. And the most important part of building that trust is having people like Dr. Patricia Tellez-Giron, like other colleagues that I have who are medical professionals of color, who are ongoing doing work in their own communities. And so they're seen really as these individuals who bridge the two worlds, right? Mm. The world of healthcare, and are also very much so embedded and part of their own communities and really seen as leaders within their own communities.
Dr. Tayas-Giron, when it comes to getting out facts on COVID and the vaccine, what do you see as the role of Latino leaders, like physicians, like Spanish language media, like Hispanic elected officials? What is their role at this moment?
Huge. We are in a moment in our country, I don't need to mention, you just had a program on it, where things have been really, really difficult for all of us, but particularly for communities of color. So we need to have people that we can trust, and that we can trust that their knowledge is adequate. So for me to be able to talk to people about the vaccine, I have been educating myself, obviously, about COVID from when this started, but now about vaccines over and over and over, because I do not want to deceive my community. So I first really explore all the science, so all the truth about different vaccines. And that's how I also choose to have the vaccine for me. And now that's the information that I'm using to send over my community. But that wouldn't have been enough if I wouldn't know what is in their minds. And I not only work for them, but I live in their community. I go to the stores that they go, and I see what is happening and how their lives are. And I have lived some of what they have lived in the past, because I'm also an immigrant and I have to come to this country and start over. So I hope that with all of that knowledge and the trust, the combination could all, you know, definitely help for them to believe the information that I am giving them.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Patricia Tayas-Hiron and Shiva Bidar Seeloff. They're both co-chairs of Latino Health Council in Dane County, and they're helping us understand vaccine rollout in marginalized communities, Latino community, communities of color. You can join in with your perspective. Are you a physician, a nurse, a healthcare worker? Did you get the vaccine, or do you plan to get it soon? Are you sharing information about the vaccine with your community, with your friends and neighbors? Join in what you're experiencing, 800-642-1234. Doctor, how do you respond when you hear a conspiracy theory like that the vaccine will alter someone's DNA, for instance?
I respond with science and education. So I educate people on how these wonderful vaccines are not new. They have been developed over 20 years, and it was because of that we could develop the vaccine so quickly, specifically for COVID. I explain how there is only a very little part of the virus that comes into our system and just gives instructions on how to work to create immunity, and then hours later that little part is gone and never really has a contact directly with our DNA. So obviously I explained that in a level that they could understand, that is language and culturally appropriate. And then I also listen. I listen to what concerns they have about this and validate their concerns, but also explain how this is not possible.
Shiva, across the world, raising awareness about immunization so communities are educated and informed. You mentioned outreach. It's always been, those things have been always been key for successful vaccination campaigns. But this time feels different. The vaccine developed so quickly. The COVID deaths are rising. That is scary. America is reeling after the election. Do we need to take a different approach to reaching communities of color?
You are absolutely correct that this time feels very different, right? It feels very different because we're also at the same time that we have lived through the pandemic of COVID-19 and its disproportionate impact, we have also lived in this country to a reckoning of racism and issues that have been with us for such a long time. So those two things really kind of come together, right? And so the distrust is really fully present in the conversations that we're having. And so I think the different approach is that oftentimes the way that we have done this education has been really top down. It's been like, here's the information. We are systems and we have the medical knowledge and here's the information, believe us, right? And automatically you should believe us because we are the experts. And I think what we are saying now is the communities are experts also, very much so in their own experiences, in their own history. And so what we need to do is not think that this is a one-way conversation, but really a two-way conversation. We are giving information out and we are hearing, just like Dr. Patricia Tayas-Hiron said, we're also listening to the community and what they are really saying to us, and then responding to those concerns in a way that is a conversation and a dialogue, and it needs to be ongoing. It cannot be a one-time conversation.
Let's bring in Tyrone, who's joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Tyrone. What would you like to add?
Good morning, Kate, and good morning, Milwaukee. Good morning, doctors. Good morning. Good morning to all. Best wishes for the new year to all. And am
you
I coming
too.
Through?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. I agree, and there's a lot to be agreed upon that's been spoken about this morning. And I personally, as it stands right now, no, I will not, because I think it's been emergency, if that's a proper word. The emergency push out of it is not good enough. I mean, with the ingredients that are, that are being experimented with here, all these different things here, umbilical cords, placentas, all this different stuff here from, aborted fetuses and all this here and other stuff. I would love to see the FDA and the CDC step up and do their job. And it's a world problem, so we have to tackle it as a world there. And let's start seeing what we can do as far as more herbs, natural herbs and ingredients that we can use, as opposed to these different things like the aluminum and ammonia and all these different things here that's, you know, really hurting people's reproductive.
And Tyrone, I'm going to pause here and allow Dr. Tyus Hiron to respond at this point. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, I respect your beliefs and your standpoint. However, I am not sure that they are based on scientific evidence. These vaccines do not have anything to do with the things that you mentioned. They are made with a different technology that is actually very scientifically proved. And they have been in existence, these techniques, for over 20 years. And that's how we were able to produce the vaccines quicker. So I don't think that there are any components of the vaccine that actually were made the way you are mentioning it.
We're discussing efforts to help communities fight COVID and trust the vaccine. We have Shiva Bidar Seeloff. We have Dr. Patricia Tyus Hiron. We will pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. According to a Pew Research Center survey conducted in late November, around 63% of Hispanics say they would definitely or probably get a COVID vaccine, slightly higher than white adults surveyed. Meanwhile, health clinics, community groups are mobilizing to educate and reassure communities of color that the vaccine is safe, despite anything they've heard to the contrary. How do you feel about high-profile people taking the vaccine publicly? Does this boost your confidence? What do you want to know more about in regards to the COVID vaccine? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. We have family medicine physician Dr. Patricia Tyus Hiron and UW Health Chief Diversity Officer Shiva Bidar Seeloff there with us for the hour. Doctor, I'm thinking about dairy farm laborers. I'm thinking about meat packing facilities, factory laborers, places where people work close together, where they live in crowded conditions, perhaps, making virus transmission spread rapidly. What information is reaching these workers?
Well, there has been a lot of information in the national television that we are hoping that people are reaching. There have been other efforts locally to also reach this population. Again, we have a radio program that we have been doing for 17 years, and now through the pandemic, most of the information that we have had at the program is at that radio station. And that radio station actually reaches a big part of these communities and most Wisconsin. So we have been using also the media. So we have a Facebook page where we have been placing reliable language and cultural appropriate information that obviously can go all over the world. And we have been advertising widely over media. We have actually every media that you can think of. We are part of it. So we are hoping that by all of these efforts that we are reaching a very large portion of this population.
It seems, Shiva, word of mouth, though, really carries a lot. What are productive ways people who do not work in healthcare could have a conversation about taking the vaccine with their family members or friends or their neighbors?
I think you're absolutely correct that word of mouth makes a big difference, right? Because we all believe mostly people that are within our social networks. That's why social media has such power, right? People really kind of follow the conversations of people that are within their kind of their social network. And that's the most effective way actually to influence somebody's opinion about an issue. So I think that is the reason that as we start really rolling out the vaccine and we start having more people hopefully actually get the vaccine, that we really need to educate those people about how to have conversation on the reasons that they decided to get the vaccine. So not only like having them come and get the vaccine, but really actually maybe taking that opportunity to say you can now actually be an important vector of information for the rest of your community. Talk about it. Really make it known that you took this decision and why you took this decision. So part of, I think, what I want to see us do as we're rolling out the vaccine is do that, right? Not only have people come and get it, but also come and get maybe a 10-5 minute education about here's how you can now talk about it to other people within your social network, to your family and friends.
Yeah, so getting the vaccine, but also carrying that information forward. Let's bring in Melanie now in Madison. Hi, Melanie. I understand you are a doctor.
Yeah, hi. I'm Dr. Melanie Char. I'm a physician in the Madison area, and I just wanted to speak to Tyrone's concerns, not just as a doctor, but as a Catholic. The National Catholic Registry, or the National Catholic Register, posted a Vatican doctrinal statement about the moral and sort of the concerns about the development of the vaccine. And basically, you know, people can go and look on the National Catholic Register themselves to see the whole statement. While the Catholic Church does not condone any, vaccine development that happens with tissues from unborn fetuses, they found that this vaccine has such distant sort of development from any of that technology that the vaccine is morally acceptable. And so I think especially for the Wisconsin Hispanic community, but also the Catholic community and the Christian community, it's important that we look at the science carefully, and we also look at the ethics carefully. And it was very reassuring. I'm going to get my second dose of the vaccine on the 13th of this month, and I'm feeling just fine, not just physically, but also ethically with this decision.
Dr. Char, thank you so much for calling in. Dr. Tyas Hiron, have you seen the Vatican statement, and what do you think of it?
Yes, I have it in front of me right now. And there was one that was issued in 2005 and then reaffirmed in 2017. And that the statement specifically says that Catholics may receive vaccines using historically fetal cell lines in good conscience. So I'm sorry, that they receive vaccines using historical fetal cell lines in good conscience. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we need to clarify that the two vaccines that are currently being used in our systems, which is Pfizer and Moderna, they are synthetic vaccines. So they did not use any fetal tissue or lines. AstraZeneca is the one that has been questioned because of this. And really, when you look at the explanation of where the cell line came from, it's a very distant, but indeed may have been from that. But again, even with that vaccine, the Vatican had that statement.
We're talking with Dr. Patricia Tyas-Hiron. We have Shiva Bidar Silaf, Chief Diversity Officer, EW Health. They have been leaders in the Latino Health Council in Dane County for decades. You can join in on the rollout and communities of color, 800-642-1234. Doctor, I'm wondering what you say to people, to patients who come to you and say, well, what about herbal remedies? What about teas in fighting COVID?
I am going to disclose that my grandmother was a curandera in Mexico. She was a healer. My mom is also a healer. And we have a very strong belief in the natural remedies. And I definitely have studied some natural remedies that are really effective, actually, against many, many diseases. However, we are talking with a virus that was new to us until recently, that we are learning a lot about how to go against, that we have seen how lethal this virus has been. And definitely we have talked to our patients about using natural remedies to boost their immunity, but not as something that they can use against the virus. So vaccines have been proved to be effective, safe, And that's what we are communicating with people, that using their home remedies to boost their immunity is a good idea, but definitely getting the vaccine. And Latinx, historically, we are genetically like that. We are a mix of many races. And like that, we are also a mix of several beliefs. We are very used to our curanderos and our chamans and all that. But we are also very used to the Western medicine. And that's what we do. And that's what we are counting on doing for our population.
Shiva, I'm wondering how meaningful it was to see Sandra Lindsay, the first person in the U.S. to be vaccinated. And she said she wanted to inspire people who look like her. How meaningful is it to have a Black nurse getting the vaccine first?
I think it's extremely meaningful, and I would say that the first person actually that got the vaccine at UW Health, Tina, was a Black respiratory therapist, and she also talked about how she had made that choice and wanted to come forward to be the first person vaccinated in our system because she knew that representation matters, that she wanted to kind of bring a face and a voice to communities of color, to her own community, about her choice of getting the vaccine. Again, I think that seeing ourselves represented in who is getting the vaccine makes a big difference because so often in the history, what we've seen is that these new kind of findings, these new discoveries really disproportionately go to people with privilege and that don't look like people in communities of color. So I think it does send a really clear message to the community that there are people within our own communities that are making a choice to get the vaccine. And we know, and if we know something over the past few days, actually, we know that the what you say in a microphone matters, right? When you have the kind of the ability to get messages out, people are listening. And so being able to really have these community leaders, healthcare providers have the ability to use their voice to as a megaphone to say, we are healthcare providers and we're making that choice. We are from our own communities of color, makes a difference. And Kate, if I may also say about, you know, we talked about faith and how, you know, your belief system can influence your choices about the vaccine. One of the ways that we are trying also to partner and get the message out about the vaccine is actually by partnering with faith-based organization and with churches. On, for example, on Saturday, I have been invited to be part of a panel discussion at Mount Zion Church here in Madison, historically large African-American church in our community. So, again, doing those kind of conversations within churches and other faith-based organizations and, in you know, whether it's mosques, synagogues, churches, very important because there is a lot of people, of course, that are going to really be listening to information that's provided through their faith-based social groups.
Right. We're talking with UW Health Chief Diversity Officer Shiva Bidar-Seeloff. We have Dr. Patricia Tayas-Hiron, a family medicine physician, about how COVID vaccine will be accepted in communities. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about fighting COVID in communities of color. Shiva Bidar-Seeloff is Chief Diversity Officer at UW Health. Dr. Patricia Tayas-Hiron is a family medicine physician in Madison, longtime health education advocate in Dane County. Let's bring in Ivan now in Madison. Hi, Ivan. What would you like to add?
Hi. Good morning. Hey, Dr. Tayas, thank you very much, Shiva. Thanks for everything you do for our community. I just send people in your way all the time. I want to say hi to Senora Yolanda, Dr. Tejas. She's a great member of our community. I work in health insurance, and all the time I receive calls from people. I serve mostly people that speak Spanish, and they ask, hey, how much is going to be the vaccine? How much is the copay for, you know, being tested? So I think there's a lack of information in that regard. there's anything you guys can do to, you know, do more outreach, not only for people, young people, but people in Medicare, people over 65. There's anything we can do or you guys can do for spread the word and let people know.
Ivan, thank you for that. Dr. Tais Hieron, what are the issues around health insurance, the cost, everything Ivan said here?
Ivan, muchas gracias por llamar. Thank you for calling. Yes, definitely. We have done a lot, but there's always more to do. And we want to let the audience know, and I know that a few people that speak Spanish listen regularly to your show, because I do. And according to what we know, the vaccine is going to be free for everyone, regardless of documentation status or even if they are applying for their green card or other. So we want to reassure the people, at least here in Dane County, if not all over Wisconsin, that they are going to have access for free to the vaccine.
Okay.
Regarding testing, that has been also free through public health. And we actually, through the Latino Health Council, we were able to secure a place in the south side of Madison that has full bilingual personnel that can help them with any doubts that they have when they go to do their testing. And the same volunteers are going to also be helping with the vaccine. And we are hoping that when it is widely, you know, we have enough vaccine, that public health is also going to be a crucial part of vaccinating the community.
Let's quickly bring in Julie in Green Bay. Hi, Julie.
Good morning. I board my horse at a facility with a Hispanic family, and they are just the loveliest people. I actually have learned Spanish so that I could interact with them, but it's conversational Spanish and around the vocabularies, farm vocabulary. I'd like to know if there are any resources in terms of pamphlets. I mean, I can kind of piece together with a translation service, trying to come up with something on my own to use to either give to them or discuss it with them. I think they know I care about them, so I believe they trust me.
Julie, thank you. And Shiva, where can you point Julie to?
So the CDC actually has really great information in Spanish that is available. They have been developing really very good materials in Spanish. There usually is a little bit of a lag time between the time that they publish like their flyers in English and the Spanish. But if you go to the CDC website and look at their COVID vaccine information, you'll find really very nice handouts that you can already give to them. And then we are working on developing, of course, more materials to certainly the health systems, but also public health department and DHS. Mm. I think it's important to know that we're going to have more materials become available, because right now the reality is the vaccine is not available for the majority of people. It's only been available for, again, that's, you know, what we call the group 1A healthcare providers, long-term care facilities. But as the vaccine starts being rolled out to larger population, we are also going to have more materials that we definitely are going to have available in Spanish for
sure. Well, thank you both for joining us. That was Shiva Bidar Silov, Chief Diversity Officer at UW Health, and Dr. Patricia Tais Hieron, practices family medicine in Madison, leaders in the Latino Health Council in Dane County. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with the history of an iconic beverage.
What's the first drink you think of when you hear this sound? A Pepsi, a Miller Lite, or was it a Jolly Good Soda, a drink that has its roots right here in Wisconsin? A can of Jolly Good Soda is one of the many items included in the Wisconsin 101 Project, which tells the state's history through objects. WPR's Rachel Vasquez visited the Jolly Good plant to reintroduce us to a Midwestern favorite.
If you're having trouble remembering Jolly Good, maybe this will ring a bell.
The next time you're in a food store buying cola, root beer, orange, or any flavored soda, take a good look at the price. I mean a really good look. At Jolly Good, we believe in quality, but we also believe in value. We want you to get your money's worth.
Jolly Good was beloved by Midwesterners in its heyday. Queer Foods started the brand in the 1970s in Belgium, Wisconsin. But after decades of filling fridges across the region, competition from the big soda companies edged them out. They sold the last case of Jolly Good in 2007. But then 2013 rolled around, and an uncle and his nephew had an idea.
The term craft became very popular in the beer industry. Was there some opportunity for us to play off that niche?
That's John Rassel, the nephew of the pair, and now the president of Queer Foods. His uncle, Bruce Queer, headed the company before him.
He was the one that really propelled Jolly Good to what it was.
The two talked about if they could relaunch the brand and how it would work. Soon enough, they had a shot at putting it back on store shelves.
So we just decided to make a small batch and see what happens.
Rassel says their first big win was getting Jolly Good into Piggly Wiggly. But before long, they were selling in retailers like Woodman's Markets, Sendix, and now their latest retail partner, Festival Foods.
Right now, I think we would deem it as a success.
Today, the company makes Jolly Good at their facility in the small community of Random Lake, about 20 miles outside of Sheboygan. They produce 8 regular flavors and 7 diet, including cherry, cream, and the beloved Sour Power. Before the cans get to you, each and every one goes through a special process. First, they mix it all up in a place they call the batch room.
So we have 2 8,000-gallon tanks and then 2 6,000-gallon tanks. So we batch the liquid back here, and then we send it out to the filler to be put into the cans.
Next, some tests to make sure it's all up to snuff, and then all of that soda and a bunch of empty cans are sent to the filler room, which always smells like whatever flavor is being filled. That machine goes very fast.
700 to 800 cans a minute.
From there, the cans are sent over to be boxed up and shrink-wrapped. And then they're put on a pallet in a warehouse with cans that go as far as you can see. That's where they wait before they head out to stores across Wisconsin, along with a few places in Illinois. Even with the pandemic, Rassel says Jolly Good has been doing well. But he says they've also got ground to make up with customers they missed when they had to stop selling.
If you do the math from 2007 to 2014, when we weren't on the shelves, we missed a generation.
Rassel says they have some help with that, though, from older generations who still know and love Jolly Good.
Part of it is that those older generations remembering the brand, remembering the memories, and wanting to recreate those memories with the younger generation. It's very impactful, this, you know, especially during this time.
That's where a lot of the brand's power comes from, the nostalgia people feel for it.
Whether it was camping, ball games, you know, the lake house, the beach, you know, you name it. Everyone, you know, just kind of reached out, you know, oh, I remember drinking Jolly Good.
Rassel's uncle Bruce passed away before he had a chance to see Jolly Good come to life again. He says it was important to pay homage to him and his work building Jolly Good.
Hopefully he'd be proud. I think we did a pretty good job.
WPR's Rachel Vasquez brought us that story on Jolly Good Soda. It's part of the Wisconsin 101 Project, which tells our state's history through objects. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.